The seven UU principles are the values we share as a congregation. They give us our identity and draw others to join us. When we say we affirm these principles, we are saying that we give them our stamp of approval. When we say we will promote them, we are saying that we try to live by them and help others to accept them and also live by them as well. And today, Holly and Summer, and with a little help from Hannah Mae too, will introduce you to one of our principles and tell you what it means to them.
Okay, so this fall we are focusing on the seven UU principles. Today we celebrate the fourth UU principle, which is we affirm and promote a free and responsible search for truth and meaning.
Another way to say this principle is we believe that each person must be free to search for what is true and right in life.
So in thinking about this principle, what it means to me, it really seemed to mean a number of different things. So I came to three things, that and I'll say them really briefly. So the first one is that knowing that, first of all, Unitarianism doesn't come with a prescribed dogma, and so we really need to think for ourselves. That's the first thing. And then that leads me to the second thing, which is that that means I need to think about what spirituality means to me. And so that's hard work, and I need to make time in my really, really busy, hectic life to try to do that. And one way I do that is just by coming here on Sunday morning, because that gives me that space. And then the last thing is that even though the church doesn't give me those answers, it gives me a framework, and that's really helpful, because everything we talk about during this church service prompts me to think about something in a different way or opens a door to a path that I hadn't thought about, and so I find that really helpful. So even though truth and meaning sounds kind of daunting, I can kind of boil it down to those things that it means to me.
In the days ahead, we ask you to be conscious of this UU principle and to think about what it means in your own life.
Please join us now in saying the words of the fourth principle as printed in your order of service.
We affirm and promote a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Thank you both. You did an excellent job. Well, you heard that we're talking about truth today, okay? So I want to tell you a little story about seeking the truth. That's what it says in our principle that we promote. And as I do, I want you to think about what that story tells us about seeking the truth. And then maybe, Michelle, you could help me. Maybe we can get a couple of people to tell us what they think it might mean. First, let's start with the story. There was a young man, and he wanted to find the truth. So he left his home, said goodbye to his family, and he went on a journey looking for the truth. And he went all far places. He went and he would run into people who would say, he'd say, I'm looking for the truth. And they would say, oh, you can climb that mountain and find it. Or you can follow this path. Or I found it by doing this. Or whatever. And he would do all these things and he would keep looking. And he went on a journey all over the world to all different cultures and all different countries. And he traveled for so long that he became an older man. He was in his 70s, maybe even older than that. And he began to realize that he really had seen a lot of interesting things, but he hadn't really learned the truth. So he was kind of disappointed. So he decided that he had just better go home. So he went home, and his house was there, and he got to his house, and he opened the door of the house, and he went inside, and guess what? Who knows what? He found the truth there. That's right. So what do you think that story tells us? Can anybody got any ideas of one thing that story might tell us? Well, let me ask you a question. Does it tell us that truth is easy to find? Yes. No. If it takes 75 years, is it, or 70 years, is it easy to find? What do you think? Ah, okay, good, good. Now, let me ask you another one. Do you have to look for truth in far-off places? Where might you look? Yeah, and sometimes we might say, when I say in your own house, it might be like looking right inside yourself. You know what I mean about that? It means sort of thinking just inside yourself to what truth might be. Okay? Now, where might we get ideas about what somebody else's truth is? Does the story tell us about that? Everyone's different. Different places, different cultures, different places. People think about truth in different ways. So it tells us that our truth isn't necessarily the same as someone else's truth, and that to find our truth takes us some work. We can call it a journey of searching for it. Sometimes it might be we find it where we think it might be, and other times it might surprise us where we would find our truth. And it's really important in that journey that we look right close to home, too, because there's lots of truth to be had right there. So as you continue with your principles today, you're thinking about the fourth principle, the search, free and responsible search for truth and meaning. I hope you'll keep that story with you. I call that mind free, which masters the senses and which recognizes its own reality and greatness.
Which passes life not in asking what it shall eat or drink, but in hungering, thirsting, and seeking after righteousness.
I call that mind free, which jealously guards its intellectual rights and powers, which does not content itself with a passive or hereditary faith.
Which opens itself to light, whencesoever it may come, which receives new truth as an angel from heaven.
I call that mind free, which is not passively framed by outward circumstances, and is not the creature of accidental impulse.
Which discovers everywhere the radiant signatures of the infinite spirit, and in them finds help to its own spiritual enlargement.
I call that mind free, which protects itself against the usurpation of society and which does not cower to human opinion.
Which refuses to be the slave or tool of the many or of the few, and guards its empire over itself as nobler than the empire of the world.
I call that mind free, which resists the bondage of habit, which does not mechanically copy the past, nor live on its old virtues.
But which listens for new and higher monitions of consciousness, and rejoices to pour itself forth in fresh and higher exertions.
I call that mind free, which sets no bounds to its love, which, wherever they are seen, delights in virtue and sympathizes with suffering.
which recognizes in all human beings the image of God and the rights of God's children, and offers itself up a willing sacrifice to the cause of humankind.
I call that mind free, which has cast off all fear but that of wrongdoing, and which no menace or peril can enthrall.
Which is calm in the midst of turmoils, and possesses itself, though all else be lost.
Tell me, where is the road I can call my own, that I left, that I lost so long ago? All these years I have wandered, oh, when will I know there's a way, there's a road that will lead me home? After wind, after rain, when the dark is done, as I wake from a dream in the gold of day, through the air there's a calling from far away. There's a voice I can hear that will lead me home.
For those who like to pin down Unitarian Universalists, especially Unitarian Universalist ministers, a favorite question is, what do Unitarian Universalists believe anyway? And sometimes that question is asked rather smugly, with the implication that the questioner comes from a tradition that knows what it believes, that has the answers, the truth, with the capital T. I might reply to him by telling him about our rich, very rich theological history and our roots in the Judeo-Christian tradition. I could tell him how today we draw truth from many different sources and explain what some of them are. But these responses often do not satisfy those questioners. What he and folks like him want are specific theological statements as to what every Unitarian Universalist holds to be true. And although we share many values and beliefs, I can't give them the kind of answer they're looking for. And that discussion often leads to a second question that goes something like this. Well, you do believe that the Bible is true, don't you? I've worked on the answer to that question, and it's now always the same. I tell them that I believe the Bible contains a great deal of truth. There certainly are parts of the Bible that contain historical facts, but they're not really the most important parts. What is, or are the stories, whether factually true or not, the poetry we call the Psalms, the moral teachings throughout, all these can help us make meaning and help us find truth. Of course, where we find truth is not limited to one text from ancient times or even texts from many traditions. Revelation for us is not sealed. It's ongoing. We're open to new truth, as you heard, from whencesoever it may come. That's what William Ellery Channing was getting at in those words we shared, words written nearly 200 years ago. We're free to draw water from many spiritual wells. We may find our truth in many different places, very traditional places and non-traditional places as well. We don't believe there is one truth or one way of making meaning that must be accepted by all. Now, that's a real challenge for those who have been indoctrinated with the idea that there is only one singular ultimate truth. But it's also a challenge for us who walk this journey of seeking and claiming our own individual truth. That star of truth of which we just sang can indeed be rather dim at times, and we can become quite weary following the path or the many paths of truth which it may illuminate for us. Truth is a very loaded word. It means different things to different people and in different situations. Now, we often think of truth in this era in terms of concepts that are factually provable. That wasn't the case historically. That's since the scientific age. Things like 2 + 2 = 4, or the earth is round. We can prove that. They're true. Or truth may refer to personal honesty, as in to tell the truth. But in this world of religion, neither of these are really what we're talking about when we speak about seeking the truth. When we use the word in relation to religious beliefs, we're talking about what at the core of your being you hold to be true. What is the unifying belief or beliefs in your life? The ideas that give you a sense of personal wholeness and guide you in your approach to many of life's questions. Is it that there is a personal God that responds to your prayers and watches over you? Is it that there is a force of love and justice and grace in the world that is bigger than our human experience? Or is it that human existence is all there is, but within each of us is a powerful source of and potential for good? These three statements are quite different from each other, but each reflects what is at the heart of truth and the foundational principle for meaning-making for some group of Unitarian Universalists. You may be saying, well, I'm really just not that sure what I believe. I vacillate, or I believe some of this and some of that. That's great. You're on the journey. Hopefully all of us are still on the journey, meaning that we're not closed to new insights that may enrich or modify or even dramatically change our truth. Truth is rarely grasped all at once as one overarching belief system just incorporated into you. It's built through experience and testing over time. I think we all yearn for truth, just as the people of all times in history have done. And really, our yearning for truth is no different from the yearning of those of biblical times. Seeking the truth is the religious journey, and as such, I don't believe that we are any less religious than those ancient biblical forebearers. We essentially do the same thing that they did. We ponder and are troubled by the same big questions, and we try to answer them in the context of and with the knowledge of our own time. That's what they did too. We are a faith tradition that encourages questions rather than blind acceptance of truth statements. As a religion that evolved during the Enlightenment, reason played a strong role in how we historically define truth. We shared the words of William Ellery Channing this morning in that reading. In 1819, he preached one of the most famous sermons ever delivered in this country, a sermon that was second only to Thomas Paine's newspaper Common Sense in the number of copies it sold to the public. It was the sermon that in some ways defined us as a faith tradition. And in it, he broke from the traditional view of the time about truth. That truth was known only from the literal reading of the Bible, saying that the Bible was like any other book and not all equally inspired. And to discern truth, we were to apply reason to our reading of the Bible and also not limit ourselves to it as the only source of truth. Chanting words on the free and responsible search for truth that we shared as a reading this morning remind us that historically we are a faith that jealously guards our intellectual rights and powers, which does not content itself with a passive or hereditary faith, which opens itself to light whensoever it may come, which receives new truth as an angel from heaven, which discovers everywhere the radiant signature of the infinite spirit. And right on Channing's heels, then comes Emerson and the Transcendentalists, and things shift again. Their primary point was that we actually know truth intuitively, not from the books. We don't need to read the scripture and then apply reason to it. We don't need a book or a tablet with 10 commandments. We don't need a book of reported miracles to determine what we believe is true. Those aren't bad things. They can lead us to greater understanding and appreciation of truth. But Emerson would say, they're secondhand. You can know the truth and should know the truth from a first-hand experience. So truth for the transcendentalists is written in us and all around us. We hold on to these ways of knowing truth from our 19th century forebearers today, but in the 20th century, new ways come and are added to the mix. The humanist movement, which emerges in the 1930s in our faith tradition, strongly aligns truth with scientific verifiability. Truth comes from direct observation, experimentation, and rational analysis, and values are derived from human needs and interests as tested by experience. Also later in the 20th century, Unitarians and Universalists continue to know truth from all these paths, but even open up to more thoughts and practices as well. Ancient earth-centered traditions that teach us that truth is written in the natural world, though those were certainly part of the transcendentalist movement as well, become even more important as a way of knowing truth. And other practices and teachings of other world religions and philosophies, especially Buddhism, I think, enter the mix. What's important to remember is that one way of knowing truth does not replace another. It provides us with another option. And I might know the same truths, for instance, from the Bible, from a Buddhist practice, from my own deep self-examination, or from my observation of nature. Sometimes Unitarian Universalist churches, in approaching this issue of truth, are compared to restaurants with large menus. There's a great variety to choose from. And it's a learning process just to read and engage and discuss the menu. Now, you may have your favorite dish, and the temptation is to order that meal every time because you know that you like it. You don't have to eat everything on the menu. Indeed, it could really be overwhelming to try to do so. But we hope you will try some of the things others like rather than just order the same meal every time. And we hope you will see how others really take pleasure and nourishment from dishes that you might not at all care for. Ultimately, as the children's message, I hope, brings home, truth for each of us is a personal thing, and to know it requires our effort. There's no easy route to truth. We may not recognize or claim our truth until we have been searching for a while. We will look in wrong places, And it may take us time. But ultimately, our truth is close at home. It comes first, or finally, by knowing ourselves. It's the product of all our life experience. Our truth may change over time. We have to discover it and claim it and test it and rediscover it and retest it. This free search for truth needs to be done responsibly. That's another important word in that principle. It should be characterized by learning, by self-awareness, by a non-judgmental attitude towards both new ideas and old ideas. The search needs to be approached with humility. This excerpt from a short story by Anthony DeMello makes that point. To a visitor who describes himself as a seeker of truth, the teacher says, "If what you seek is truth, there is one thing you must have above all else." "I know," answered the student, "an overwhelming passion for it." "No," the teacher said, "an unremitting willingness to admit you may be wrong." Not long ago, I was speaking with someone who was raised in a particular Christian tradition, but did not consider himself part of that any longer. In fact, he was quite critical of his former church that in some ways had been damaging to him. But he said, "When I explore what I believe, I still go back, even back to childhood, to certain images and teachings from that tradition that still seem true or right to me. Some of those stories of Jesus helping the downtrodden, going back for the one lost sheep, loving the sick and the poor, these stories have helped me to live a meaningful life." Sometimes, as the piece Mike beautifully sang for us this morning reminds us, finding our truth is at least in part a journey home, a journey back. Often someone will come to me and say, "I don't really know what is true," or "I'm not sure what I should believe." Sometimes that's just a casual conversation. But sometimes they're at a point in life where it really matters. Maybe they're facing a crisis. Maybe even their mortality. Many of us don't know for sure what we believe about the ultimate questions. Is there a God? If so, what is that God like? Do I exist apart from my physical being? Do I continue to be in some way after I die? These are big questions, and we have to live into them. They can be daunting, but truth can be built in our lives in small pieces. We don't have to start with the ultimate questions. So when a person comes to me, perhaps stressed that they don't have the answer to the truth question, or that they find their old version of the truth no longer seems right to them, I often ask them, "What are some of the things in life that you believe? What does your life experience teach you about your place in the world, about other people and your relationship to them? What rules are important for you to live by? What brings you peace?" When you take the time to walk in the woods or along the beach, what comes to mind? Is there a poem, a passage from Scripture, a work of art, that when you engage with it, something inside you says, "Yes, that is the way it is"? When you see people doing good or people doing evil, how do you understand that? And I often conclude by sharing words that I found helpful at times when I was unsure about something. They're from Rilke's Letters to a Young Poet. "I would like to beg you, dear sir, as well as I can, to have patience with everything unresolved in your heart, and to try to love the questions themselves, as if they were locked rooms or books written in a very foreign language. Don't search for the answers which could not be given to you now, because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps then someday far in the future, you will gradually, without even noticing it, live your way into the answer. The search for truth is often about taking time to live with the questions. You know, those people who jump into a particular theology, bang, and right away claim they now have the truth, scare me a bit, because I know that they have had to shut out a great deal, close themselves off to much of the world, probably remove themselves to be surrounded by like-minded people and disassociated with those whom they judge to be wrong. Our truth is continually shaped by the journey itself. Now, we're not on a journey to solve a riddle or get a prize. Our journey is to live life fully. And therefore, we are out to discover those fundamental insights that help us do that. Finally, I believe that the context in which we each engage in the search for meaning and truth is very important. For us now here, the context is our church and this inclusive faith tradition. Besides being a church that offers a rich menu of theological and philosophical perspectives, we do something else very important to your individual free search for truth. We keep the responsibility piece of the question on the table, and we provide you with a kind of support you will not find in many other places. In our covenant that we recite each week, we say that we will seek the truth in love. What does that mean? Well, it means, for one thing, that we will love ourselves on the journey. But it also certainly tells us how we need to relate to others on the journey, especially others whose journey to truth may be going in a different direction than ours. Where we each end up in terms of what we claim as ultimate and true is a personal decision. But here in community, we share ideas that may help us to build our individual truth, and we test our truth here in community. The Reverend Frederick Muir once said, referring to this search for truth, "It's a journey, not a race, and not a scavenger hunt. It's for a lifetime, not until the next book comes out or a fad begins." There may be times when you want quick, easy answers to big questions. I'm sorry to say, you won't find them here. But you will find something that I believe is much more sustaining and spiritually nourishing. You'll find love and support and encouragement, thoughtful ideas, new perspectives, and healthy challenges. You will not be force-fed the truth, but we walk with you as you discover it, and we will together celebrate that journey. These words are from Joan Morgan. "In the end, it won't matter how much you have, but rather how much you've given. It won't matter how much you know, but rather how much you love. And it won't matter how much you profess to believe, but rather how deeply you live the few enduring truths that you claim as ultimate." I invite you now to sing a benediction of peace to each other found in your order of service.